We're talking about the police shooting of an unarmed mixed-race man in Madison on Friday night. Officers were responding to a call about a reported assault and a man wandering in and out of traffic, according to Madison Police Chief Mike Koval. Koval said the officer followed the suspect to an apartment, forced entry after hearing a disturbance in the home. According to Koval, 19-year-old Tony Robinson assaulted the officer, who then shot and killed him.
Since Robinson's death Friday night, there have been lots of demonstrations and community meetings in Madison about social justice and race relations. Our next guest has been talking about race relations in Madison, especially since he wrote a column on the topic about a year and a half ago called Justified Anger that generated a huge response.
Reverend Alex G. joins us now. He's a pastor at the Fountain of Life Covenant Church in Madison and chair of the Justified Anger Coalition. Reverend G., welcome back to Central Time.
It's good. It's very nice to be back here again.
So you led a vigil on Sunday night for Tony Robinson. What did you see the mood as at that vigil on Sunday?
Well, I actually participated. Members of Young Gifted in Black and Michael Johnson and others and family members actually planned it. But it was a very somber vigil, very organized, very well done. Fortunately, the weather was favorable. But there was an open mic part where Tony's friends had a chance to speak. And that was particularly powerful for me to hear young people talk about their friend, talk about their take on what had happened, on the violence and their perception. But it felt like it was a great opportunity while the national media was there for young people to express their grief. And I was very proud of our young Madisonians that evening.
Well, and speaking of young Madisonians involved in the protest, high school, college students, middle school students had a walkout, march to the Capitol. Talk about youth activism as this issue has gone forward.
I love it. We believe in youth leadership development in our community. We believe in having youth share their, to have their say, to share their perspectives. And I think that this was really responsible. It wasn't just a way to skip school. I'm glad that it was planned and organized, that they walked to the Capitol. But what an empowering opportunity to say, we feel that this was wrong. We want justice to be served. We've watched Selma. We've heard what our ancestors have done when things were not right. And now we get to make history. I think that it was an absolutely wonderful opportunity to show solidarity and to help our children think about something larger than themselves.
Now, people around the state, around the country, are looking at what's going on in Madison, comparing and contrasting with what's been a template for this kind of event, sadly, in Ferguson, Missouri. How do you compare and contrast what's going on here versus how things played out in Ferguson?
Well, I really appreciate the leadership of our community. The nonprofit leaders have really been working together, community leaders, faith-based leaders that are working, that are meeting with Tony's families. I think that we have what Ferguson didn't have, and that's sort of a head start. We got to watch Ferguson. We watched the response of Staten Island. We watched what happened in Florida with Trayvon Martin. We watched a lot of things, and so we had a chance to learn. We also had the Race to Equity report, the discussion around Madison Prep, and Justified Anger. And so we had a chance to begin the dialogue, to begin making inroads or building inroads to each other. And I think that that helped to create a level of trust. At least it opened the doors for communication so that when times like these happen, we at least know who to talk to. We're in each other's Rolodex or smartphones, and we're at least able to have dialogue. The way it appeared to me was that some of these cities, particularly Ferguson, that they were scrambling to try to find who they could talk to and who to trust. And that's difficult when your city's burning, your heart's broken, you're in the center of national attention, and you're trying to build bridges that you may not have built. We had the advantage of building bridges to each other so that when there's a vigil, someone can text me and say, I need you at 6 o'clock. I need you at 7:30 on Willie Street, and people can show up. And so I think Madison has built relationships, and we're still building relationships. And I think that that has helped us a lot. One of the national media outlets interviewed me a few days ago, and they asked if this was going to be another Ferguson. And my response was, isn't one enough? I think to quote myself Sunday evening, I said, this is how we roll in Madison. We know how to protest but still be intelligent. We know how to share our opinions and still have integrity. But we know that the country is hurting. Black families are hurting. Black teens are afraid. Our non-African-American teens were showing their solidarity, tremendous solidarity Sunday evening. And And so I just think being able to gather in one place and to do something that was positive, to have a vigil, was just their way of bringing closure. It was a very beautiful evening, and I was happy to have been a part of it.
Now, are you worried about a polarization coming out of this? You see sometimes in the protests, people saying this is murder, saying the police department as a whole is racist, other people reacting negatively to those statements. On the other hand, people posting online very supportive of the police, dismissive of this as an important event in the first place. Do you worry that those messages on either side could pull people further apart?
Oh, certainly. But I think the issue is that we've been polarized for a long time. It's why I wrote Justified Anger. It's why we have the Race Equity Report. And I hope that the community will help us to understand that the incidents that are taking place in our community are not creating the polarization, but it has been present. And so it certainly exacerbates it. But we have to understand that we have an underlying issue, a lack of trust. We do have that polarization. And we have to address that before we can really address this issue head on, because all it does is really awakens what's been festering. But yes, I certainly see I see the polarization, and it seems to be all or none. And the people who are feeling very hurt and very suspicious are not necessarily saying that all police officers are bad. My brother's a police officer in Chicago, and so I certainly am sympathetic towards police officers, but I'm also an African-American male, and I know how I feel when I'm driving. I know how I feel when I hear things like this, and I know what I think about when I consider my nephew and the young men who are part of our congregation. And so I think we need to really be able to talk and hear each other's pain without making it feel that if you are lamenting the death of this wonderful young man, it doesn't mean that you abhor every police officer. So I don't think it needs to be either or, and I feel that we're really prone to move to those corners, and that's unfortunate.
Do you worry that maybe some of the debate is getting too bogged down in the details of this case when there's still this investigation going, when there's still a lot we don't know, and not moving on to some of the bigger underlying issues right away?
I think that's something that we have to be watchful or mindful of, because I think that can happen. I think we can't forget the systemic issues. Race to Equity reminded us that because of our disparity, we are breeding ground for actions like this. And so we need to understand that when there's a sense of disparity, we're not around each other as much. So it's easy to lean into our unconscious biases and to think that people are after us, or people are a threat. People are aggressive. People are thugs. And all of those things come to play, and we have to dismantle that, and not just what happened that evening, but how do we become so distant from each other and so fearful of each other? So I think this cannot take center stage, although it does require some immediate attention. We have to really look at the underlying issues of the disparity in reading levels, graduation rates, mass incarceration. There are things that have polarized our community. And when something like this happens, it just it brings up everyone's fears and concerns. And we all take a huge step backwards.
Now, this is a Madison story, and we've been talking about segregation in Milwaukee for some time now, a police minority group tensions there. There may be people listening around the state to our conversation now thinking, yeah, this is a Madison issue. This is a Milwaukee issue. It doesn't affect me. Why should they be paying attention and engaging in this issue?
Well, because it really is a national issue, and it's a historic issue. And if we can just make it a regional issue or a city issue, then we don't have to engage our hearts. This was a boy. It was a teenage boy. There are studies that have been done that when law enforcement professionals look at pictures of young African-American kids, they typically think that they're 2 to 3 years older than they actually are. And so we're trying to remind ourselves, this is a 19-year-old. He just graduated from high school. And if this can happen to this gentleman without repercussion, you know, again, pending the findings, that should concern everyone, because anyone who poses a threat could be at risk. But historically, this has happened in African-American communities. And for many people, particularly my mom, who's 75, who can remember, you know, just the murders, the lynchings, kids coming up missing. This is triggering older adults. And so I think people need to realize that this hurts the broader community. It makes us more fearful of each other, and it polarizes us further. And so I think people need to engage their hearts rather than just throwing out tweets and posts that are insensitive, because that doesn't help anyone.
Speaking of tweets and this as kind of a throwback issue, you tweeted related to comments about the shooting. What year is this?
Right.
I think we like in this country to think of a steady upward slope of progress on whatever issue
sure,
we're talking about.
Sure.
Do you think that that steady upward slope is dipping, that we're actually going backwards on issues of race?
As much as I hate to say that, I feel we've lost something. I don't know if I want to say that it's that we've really gone backwards, but I feel that we've lost progress that we've made, at least in my life. I don't know how far back we've gone, but there are things that children, students say to my daughter at UW-Madison that they did not say to me on this campus 30 years ago. There's a boldness to say harsh things. I wrote another tweet where I just said, I'm going to stop reading comments about Tony's death because I could not believe the insensitivity of that. Now, I remember when I worked on campus right out of college in the early mid 80s, someone put a bird or something in a microwave. That was front page news for days. People, you know, they were upset. They couldn't believe it. You know, I just remember the outrage. And if anyone had just said anything about, you know, baked chicken or baked bird or whatever, people would have been up in arms. But yet some of the insensitive things that teenagers are saying on Facebook and Twitter makes me wonder where they heard it, where they learned it, and why they feel so comfortable and justified in saying that. How can you become that cynical at such a young age? Looking at the pictures of them, they seem like they were teenagers. Where did you learn that? And so that's a huge concern of mine, that there's more chatter over something like that than the loss of this life. And the mother hasn't seen the body yet. It hasn't been released to the family yet. The world is watching and people are being polarized, and they want to make him a saint, or they want to make him an example. And they're grieving with all of this. And then they've got to read online comments that people are saying, or listen to, you know, a media source bring up an old police record. It's so insensitive, and it's just very tiring.
We're talking to Reverend Alex G. about the shooting of an unarmed mixed-race 19-year-old in Madison Friday night, Tony Robinson. We're talking about race relations in Madison and beyond and the significance of the tragedy state and nationwide.
And we'd like to hear from you on this. What's your reaction? What do you think it says about race relations in Wisconsin and the nation? And what do you think about how Madison officials have reacted so far? What would you say needs to change in your city or in Wisconsin to make things better? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation about race relations in Wisconsin with Reverend Alex G. He's the pastor at the Fountain of Life Covenant Church in Madison and the chair of the Justified Anger Coalition.
You can join in now at 800-642-1234 or on the Central Time Facebook page. What's been your reaction to the police-involved shooting death of Tony Robinson over the weekend, the protests since then? And the deeper stories behind it, issues of relations between minority communities and police in the state, inequalities among those communities. Call in now, 800-642-1234, or join us on the Central Time Facebook page. We've got Marty on the line at Elkhorn now. Marty, hi. Hey,
good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I'm going to preface my comments by the fact that I haven't seen, all I've done is heard about the story. I haven't seen anything on TV or any videos. It's my understanding that one parent was black, one parent was white. Now, how would this issue have been if it was a white kid that darted in and out of traffic, ran into the house, turned on the police officer, and he shot him? I can't imagine that it would be getting the coverage. I can't imagine that news vehicles would be traveling from different states to come in here and park themselves out in front of the house and make hay of this. And it's not for the race issue. The thrust of my comment is the media. They could have gone the other way with this, and they chose to take the sensationalistic media fervor and apply it to this topic. And
Marty, thanks a lot for the call. Reverend G., the issue of race here, should this be front and center in this conversation?
Well, historically, it's been front and center. And so really, whether or not media covers it does not change the issue. Historically, this has been the case. I mean, Marty asked the question, would it have been newsworthy if it had been a white gentleman? Historically, what's panned out is that that gentleman probably would not have been shot. Let's look at Aurora in Colorado. A white gentleman shoots up a movie theater and he's apprehended. He is taken alive. You have an unarmed black male and he's killed. And so, sure, the media wants a story. The national media is there because of where we are as a country. And they're just trying to see how the communities are responding. And of course, they want an angle. You know, he listens to the media. He's tuning into the station. He wants to hear what the media is saying and what it's thinking. But I think they're making it an issue because it is an issue. And I think the media wants to help bring this to the attention of people and people like Marty to understand we do have a racial issue. They're not creating the issue. They're bringing light to an issue that has been covered for a long time. And I frankly appreciate it.
Marty, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Nick in Milwaukee. Nick, hi.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. Pastor, a couple of things, I guess. The first is to your statement before about the comparison to the Aurora shooter to the young man in Madison. It is factual that in larger cities, Chicago, New York specifically, studies have been done showing that young black men who are armed are actually less likely to be shot by police than young white men who are armed given the same situation. Which leads me to my question. In a situation like this where the young man whose life was tragically lost, and I do believe that anyone who is killed diminishes me as well, but this young man was not without his exposure to law enforcement in the past, and while he may have been trying to change his life, I would appreciate you addressing that directly, that he had had a violent encounter with police in the past, and the police were called out to this house due to a as I understand it, a situation of violence taking place, a fight of some sort taking place.
Nick, thanks for the call. Reverend G, sure. Do we need to take that into account as we evaluate this event?
Sure. What I need, Nick, and to understand is we're not saying this person was a saint. We're asking, does his interaction with the police require death? Is that the right response? Again, I go back to Aurora. This gentleman killed multiple people, but yet he was not killed. The question is not whether or not this person was flawless. You know, if he ran in and out of traffic, does that mean you get to be shot in the chest 5 times? And actually, I mean, just being honest, these are the conversations that are really infuriating to me because that's not the point. I'm a pastor. A woman lost a 19-year-old son. I'm not going to sit here and pontificate on his record. I'm sure that Nick has some things on his own personal record that he would not want brought to the light, nor would I. But the case, what we're talking about is his life was taken, and that's the issue. We're trying to ask, was that justified for what he did? Was he armed? Did he shoot the officer? Was he accused of killing someone? Had he taken a hostage? At what point was it justified that a gun was taken out of a holster and that this young man was shot? And that's what we're trying to address. We're not saying that he was flawless, but in this country, having issues as a teenager, being on the wrong side of the tracks, does not mean that you should get shot in the chest. Otherwise, a lot of white teens who are in rehab right now, mental health hospitals, and in sobering centers would all be shot. Historically, there's a difference in treatment, and that's what we're trying to bring light to.
Tracy is on the line with us in Waupun now. Tracy, hi.
Hi there. I just had two comments. First one, the gentleman that called earlier and asked about the media's response, if there would have been a white child running in and out of traffic. My response is, when white kids run in and out of traffic, the police aren't called and the police don't shoot them. And my second question, I have a question. Why is it seems that a firearm or the gun is the only tool in the officer's toolbox when he's attacked? Why doesn't he knock him out? He's got all kinds of training.
Tracy, thanks for the call. So a concern that, saying black teens more likely to be shot, but also too quick to resort to deadly force in general, she's saying.
I think Tracy brings up a great point. Come on, we're from Madison. I've spent a lot of time down at Camp Randall on Saturday nights. White co-eds run in and out of traffic all the time on Langdon Street, on campus. It's part of college life. But she's right. Then you don't have the same amount of calls. There's not the same type of of policing. And so I think their point is very, I think is well taken. But I think what the family and the community want to know is, was there another alternative besides lethal force? That's the question. We're not saying that this kid was flawless, but could he have been tased? Could something else have happened? Did he have to be shot 5 times in the chest? And I agree wholeheartedly with Tracy, I believe her name was.
Tracy, thanks for the call. Time for one more caller. John is with us in Madison. John, hi.
Hi. My take on the media coverage is that this isn't just about Tony and his shooting, but it's about the whole racial inequality in Madison and the state of Wisconsin and in the country itself. And I think the more media coverage we have to expose this is better, you know, make people more uncomfortable and have to deal with this situation.
John, thanks for the call. That takes us to maybe a good point to end on. As tragic as the event is, could it lead to a turning point in the way we talk about and maybe address these issues?
That's what I'm hoping. I think when you consider a Staten Island or a Ferguson, I think the country does not have the perspective of it that they do of Madison, this liberal bastion community. And so I think the media wants to see, how does a well-educated middle-class community, affluent community, how does it really function? How does it respond? What happens when this shows up on its doorstep? And I think the country is really trying to learn some things, and I think we have some things that we can teach, even if it's in our failure and our mistakes. But I'm confident that if we communicate, if we not hide from the truth and work together, that we really can be an ideal, ideal might be too strong of a word, but a much stronger, much more inclusive community. And I think the country is waiting to see someone deal differently with these issues, to heal and to be an example of something positive. And I want Madison to do that so much.
Briefly, in the last 4 days, are you encouraged by what you've seen so far?
I'm encouraged by the peaceful gatherings. I'm not really encouraged by comments or citywide leadership on the issue. I'd like to see the young, gifted Black, the teens encouraged more. I think they want to see people speak more about Tony and his life. I'm hopeful that things can get better, but the last few days have been bleak.
Reverend G, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
It's Reverend Alex G., pastor at the Fountain of Life Covenant Church in Madison and chair of the Justified Anger Coalition.